From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Candidate Donald Trump promised he would pull out of the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. He said it was the worst trade deal the U.S. has ever signed. But now President Trump has gone back and forth on whether he'll pull out altogether or renegotiate. Mixed signals aside, it's worth asking whether the 23-year-old treaty could use an update. This hour on Point, we talk with three top trade negotiators from Mexico, Canada, and the United States about making NAFTA better. You can join us on air or online. Do you think NAFTA should be tweaked or tossed? Do you feel the NAFTA effect in your business or your job? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Washington is Andrew Mayada. He covers trade for Bloomberg News. Andrew, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jane.
So let's play first here. Candidate Donald Trump, during the first presidential debate on September 26th, he is slamming Bill Clinton's approval of NAFTA.
NAFTA is the worst trade deal maybe ever signed anywhere, but certainly ever signed in this country.
And then on Thursday, President Trump told reporters that NAFTA has been horrible for the U.S., that he was ready to scrap it until he got calls from Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who convinced him it would be better to renegotiate the treaty instead of scrapping it.
I said, I will hold on the termination. Let's see if we can make it a fair deal, because NAFTA has been a horrible deal for the United States. It's been very good for Canada. It's been very good for Mexico, but it's been horrible for the United States. And if you check my campaign, any of my speeches, I said I'll either renegotiate or I'll terminate. So they asked me to renegotiate. I will. And I think we'll be successful in the renegotiation.
So, Andrew, terminate or renegotiate? Where do things stand today?
I think the president will probably renegotiate. The reason is that, there's no particular reason why he has to withdraw. It's quite possible for him to renegotiate a deal with Canada and Mexico without doing that. So it could backfire if he decides to withdraw.
So the president of Mexico and Canada's prime minister both have expressed willingness to renegotiate NAFTA. Obviously, they called the president here. But how much of it is because everybody agrees it needs updating, and how much is it to mollify the U.S. president?
I think it's probably mostly to mollify the U.S. president. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the U.S. is the most powerful player here. It's the biggest economy in the world. In the case of Canada, for example, it's a destination for 75% of Canada's exports. Mexico's economy is heavily dependent on the U.S. If the U.S. says it wants to renegotiate NAFTA, these countries have little choice. That said, there are certain things that they will be looking for in any type of new agreement.
So we'll talk about that in a bit, but remind us first what NAFTA is and when it was created.
So NAFTA is the North American Free Trade Agreement, and it was signed in the 1990s, and it came into force in 1994. It's important to remember that it took about 14 months to negotiate, and even after it was signed, it took about a year and a half to come into force. So people have to realize that these things can take some time. And basically what it did, it's a very long document, but the bottom line is it effectively eliminated tariffs in the North American on the North American continent, and essentially created one single supply chain for across Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. So, for example, when a car is made in the U.S., often parts will be sourced from Canada or Mexico. It could even be assembled in Canada or Mexico, even if the car maker is based in the U.S.
Mm. Is it fair to say, Andrew, that many economists believe that NAFTA needs a makeover, that it needs to be updated?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a subject of, let's say, vigorous debate, how beneficial it's been to all three countries. I mean, I think that, the results are pretty clear, however, that trade increased dramatically after the agreement. Output increased. There's probably a modest boost to U.S. GDP, But, you know, there were downsides as well. You know, wages haven't grown in all three countries, actually, as much as people were hoping. And if you look at the U.S. manufacturing sector, less than 10% of American employees now work in factories. So there's certainly been a hollowing out in the manufacturing sector. So if there's some way for these three countries to get together and to reap the overall benefits without having the losers suffer as much, then that might be a good deal.
You say trade has increased, output has increased. There are lots of details here. It's very complicated. But I want to play then candidate Donald Trump talking about what NAFTA has done. Here he is before he was president saying he would absolutely renegotiate or terminate NAFTA. Here he is.
A Trump administration will renegotiate NAFTA. And if we don't get the deal we want, we will terminate NAFTA and get a much better deal for our workers and our companies, 100%.
So, Andrew, President Trump blames NAFTA for job cuts, for jobs going away. Is that a fair characterization?
Well, that is, again, a vigorously debated point. I mean, I think that there's no question that trade has an effect on jobs. And by the way, that's what the theory indicated anyway. The theory indicated essentially two things. The theory said that trade deals, when countries trade, it raises overall output. But the theory also showed and also speculated that when a country that has low wages trades with a country that has higher wages, the lower wage workers in the higher wage country usually suffer. So, you know, essentially those are the two trends that have come to pass.
So what are the sticking points now on any negotiation between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico over NAFTA? What do you see the biggest problems ahead?
Well, one way I think to conceptualize what the U.S. is going for is they want, as the president has indicated, they want to bring the jobs back to America, right? They want to bring that supply chain that has dispersed throughout the continent back inside American borders. And one way they want to do this is to increase the threshold for the rules of origin. So, for example, with a car produced in North America, 62.5% of the parts have to be sourced in North America. The Trump administration wants to raise that so that more of the vehicles actually produced in North America. The challenge with that is that every company knows exactly what the rules of origin are, and they know the point at which they're willing to produce within NAFTA, and it's actually more profitable just to take the tariff and produce elsewhere. So if you raise the rules of origin, you could actually reduce the amount of production onshore.
Andrew Mayotta covers trade for Business News, joins me from Washington. Really appreciate the insights. Thanks, Andrew, very much.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we've brought three top experts in North American trade together this hour now to look at how well NAFTA has worked. Joining me from Washington is Arturo Sarukhan, former ambassador for Mexico to the United States. He was involved in the early stages of NAFTA negotiations back in 1991. He was also Mexico's deputy assistant secretary for Inter-American Affairs and is now a non-resident fellow at the Brookings Institution. Ambassador, great to have you. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
So from Toronto as well, we're joined by Lawrence Herman, a Canadian trade lawyer and former diplomat. He's a senior fellow at the C.D. Howe Institute, a Canadian think tank. Mr. Herman, good to have you.
Nice to be here.
And from Taos, New Mexico, our American voice this hour, Gary Huffbauer. He's senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He was deputy assistant secretary for international trade and investment policy at the U.S. Treasury and also director of the international tax staff at the U.S. Treasury. Mr. Huffbauer, good to have you.
Thanks very much.
So I should say at the top here, all of you support NAFTA. You support free trade. But let me ask you out of the gate here, does NAFTA need to be refreshed? Does it need some updating? Do we need a NAFTA 2.0? Well, Gary Huffbauer, what do you say?
Yes, it does. There are a lot of things that have happened since it was concluded in 1994. Digital trade is a big one. State-owned enterprises were never covered in NAFTA to any great extent. And there are plenty of other issues as well. But in addition, while NAFTA really got rid of tariffs, most tariffs, between U.S., Mexico, and U.S., Canada, and Mexico, Canada, there are a lot of other barriers that do obstruct, and I will concentrate on U.S. interests, that do obstruct U.S. exports both to Canada and to Mexico. And it's a lot of weeds have grown up over the last 20 years, more than 20 years, and these could be cleared out, and I can go into the specifics when you want to do that.
We will over the hour. Let me ask this question first to our Mexico representative, former ambassador for Mexico to the United States, Arturo Socarrón. What do you say? Do you think that NAFTA could be refreshed, updated?
Absolutely. It was in many ways a unique agreement when it was negotiated and signed 23 years ago. It was, in many ways, the gold standard of free trade agreements. It was the first free trade agreement between two industrialized nations and a developing emerging economy like Mexico. But it was unique because it created symmetry. It created the same rules, a level playing field for the three countries, regardless of their economic muscle and their industrial power. But as Gary has said, the global economy has changed dramatically in the two decades since this agreement was negotiated. In many ways, NAFTA was the 1.0 of free trade agreements, and now with everything that's happened since, we are reaching that 3.0 stage where we really need to upgrade this agreement.
And so does Canada, what do you say, Lawrence Herman, where does Canada stand on this in our last 20 seconds before our first break here, and then we'll continue after?
I think Canada's position is on side with the first two speakers, Arturo and Gary. There's a willingness to renegotiate, provided that those renegotiations are fair and balanced and aren't skewed by political rhetoric, which we've been hearing from Mr. Trump and his team from day one. That's the problem.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about NAFTA this hour, the quarter-century-old trade deal between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico, and whether it's time to renegotiate it. You can join the conversation if trade negotiators came to you and asked what should be revised in this trade treaty. What would you say? To be able to watch American Netflix in Mexico City, to sell Wisconsin provolone in Canada. Just a little sound here. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said in a press conference last Thursday that he helped convince President Trump not to terminate NAFTA when they spoke on the phone on Wednesday night, making this argument to the president.
Whether or not there was a better deal to come, there were an awful lot of jobs, an awful lot of industries right now that have been developed under the NAFTA context. And a disruption like canceling NAFTA, even if it theoretically eventually might lead to better outcomes, would cause a lot of short and medium-term pain for an awful lot of families.
And here's the Mexican Economic Secretary in an interview with NPR. Last Thursday, saying that Mexico was open to renegotiating NAFTA to the benefit of both countries.
Mexico is clearly very realistic about the fact that NAFTA is a 22-year-old agreement that has to be updated. We are the second largest buyers of U.S. exports. We are the number one buyers of many production in the U.S., from manufacturing to agriculture. So we are willing to improve it. We are willing to renegotiate this agreement as long as it's in the best interest of both countries.
So it sounds like Mexico and Canada both willing to negotiate. That's what our guests here are talking about as well. Gary Huffbauer, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Arturo Socarrón, a former ambassador from Mexico to the U.S. And Lawrence Herman, senior fellow at Canada's C.D. Howe Institute. Let me start with you, Gary Huffbauer, right off the top here. I mean, we heard the Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, saying that a disruption like canceling NAFTA would be very difficult. How do you see it, that if the U.S. was to pull out of the NAFTA accord, as President Trump has talked about and is now saying, well, we might renegotiate, but nothing's off the table. What do you see if that were to happen?
Well, the Prime Minister is absolutely right. It would be a tremendous shock both to our economies and our financial markets. But we have to realize that kind of Trump starts with a very heavy, aggressive tone in negotiations. That's what he's told us in his book, The Art of the Deal. And then as the deal goes on, he gets down to the brass tacks. Let me just talk about two brass tacks with respect to Canada, where the U.S., I think, has quite legitimate grievances. One is the whole area of agricultural products, including processed foods. Now, that was not liberalized by Canada in the NAFTA. It was liberalized between the U.S. and Mexico, but not between the U.S. and Canada. So let me just take an item which is off the top. The Canadians charge a tariff of 298% on butter coming from the United States, 245% on cheese. And they have all kinds of grading mechanisms that reduce the price of U.S. wheat and barley sold into Canada. They've got dairy standards that do exclude Wisconsin dairy farmers, as President Trump said the other day. That's an old issue. That's been with us all this time. Let me talk about a new issue very quickly, and that's data flows. That wasn't much of an issue.
Data flow? Is that what you said? Data flow?
Data flows, internet, the new economy, all that.
E-commerce,
stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Canada's created something called the Shared Service Canada Act, which basically excludes U.S. firms like Amazon and Microsoft and Apple and all these from doing internet service through cloud into Canada. And the provinces, particularly B.C. and Nova Scotia, they have privacy rules that cut out U.S. firms from handling on some, kind of foolish notion that if it's stored in Canada, it's completely safe, but if it's stored in Seattle, it's not. Mm-hmm. So there are many other issues, and these are legitimate issues, but this isn't the top of the line that gets the headlines when President Trump speaks.
So our Canada representative here, Lawrence Herman, jump in here. I mean, talk about this. The economic landscape certainly has changed dramatically since NAFTA was originally signed, and Gary Huffbauer is saying here's one issue that's brand new. We've got shared services that the data flow isn't fair.
Yeah, well, when you talk about agriculture, let's talk about all the U.S. Farm Bill subsidies and supports that they give to their farmers that prevent access by Canadian suppliers of agricultural products into the U.S. market. But the point is that there are issues that can be dealt with in a reasonable, mutually beneficial way between Canada and the United States, between Canada and Mexico. But if we come to the table with rhetoric saying that NAFTA has been the most disastrous agreement ever signed by the United States, and if they don't get a deal to the U.S. benefit, Trump is going to withdraw from the NAFTA, that doesn't set a responsible, reasonable negotiating atmosphere, in my view. So we've got to get beyond this kind of rhetoric and look at, as Gary Huffbauer has mentioned, those particular areas where both parties or all three parties can agree on improvements. Nothing wrong with that.
Can you tweak it in a way, Lawrence Herman, that is mutually beneficial for each country? We're talking about agriculture and data flow. I mean, can you make it so it works for both?
Well, if we come to a set of negotiations where the understanding is we're going to look at areas where the agreement can be improved, yes, fine and good. But if we come to the table with a set of peremptory demands by the United States administration saying, take it or leave it, or we're going to go home, that is not likely to be productive of a balanced set of new agreements or tweaks or adjustments.
Arturo Sarukhan, jump in here from the Mexico perspective and talk a little bit about e-commerce, because the internet and e-commerce has changed the way that we all do business and certainly has maybe changed the efficacy of NAFTA. I mean, if you're a customer in Mexico City, you want to pay for an architect that's working for you in Chicago. I mean, how do you tax that? I mean, there are issues now that didn't exist when this all started.
Yeah, absolutely. When the three nations sat down to negotiate this agreement, there were no such things as Amazon.com or eBay, and now the role and the flow that these e-commerce platforms generate across North America is incredibly important. That's why There's an opportunity here, despite the crises, despite the my way or the highway approach of the U.S. administration to its two neighbors and trading partners as to the NAFTA negotiations. There is an opportunity here to modernize the edifice that we've used to trade in North America. It's not only about e-commerce, about being able to buy goods across the border electronically. It's also about data flows and how you protect those data flows and how you protect intellectual property rights issues. Remember that Canada, Mexico, and the United States are free powerhouses when it comes to creative industries and cultural content in Spanish, French, and in English.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, how do you ensure that in a globalized economy like the one that we have today, the talent, the creative industries, the artists, the musicians, the writers that we have in the free countries can continue to benefit from an architecture which reflects those new characteristics. But it's not only in terms of, yes, there are these new disciplines, and yes, there are issues that weren't here today when we negotiated this 23 years ago, but even on something as basic as agricultural exports. I was at the home of a good American friend over Thanksgiving, and she does not support NAFTA, and she said, well, we should get rid of it. And I said, well, you're cutting strawberries. When before NAFTA would you have been able to buy and find strawberries in the grocery store in November? And one of the reasons is because agricultural exports between the three countries have blossomed, particularly between Mexico and the United States, because we are seasonal producers. When the U.S. produces, we don't, and vice versa. And it's not only about this incredibly important two-way trade of ag products. It's about how much you pay for tomatoes, for avocados.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been, despite the fact that there are obviously, there have been losers as a result of free trade. There are huge gains. People in the United States sometimes forget that Mexico, after Canada, Canada is the number one buyer of U.S. exports. Mexico is the number two buyer of U.S. exports on mm-hmm. the face of the earth. And, you know, this trade with Mexico, at least, directly supports 6 million U.S. jobs in the United States.
Let me get a caller in here. Pat in Willington, Connecticut. You're on the air, Pat. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I am a self-employed wildlife artist. I sell my work in galleries in the United States and Canada. And I travel to Canada 3 times a year to bring artwork to the galleries. Because of NAFTA, my work is all handmade in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. Because of NAFTA, I do not pay duties on that artwork.
So if you didn't have NAFTA, what would happen to your business?
It would go. It would
go out of business.
Because the duties are would just be too high. Because mm-hmm. I bring a lot of work with
mm-hmm.
me.
So what do you see in this process here? Do you want a renegotiation? Do you want President Trump to, you know, what do you want to see?
If he pulls out, he's going to put me out of business. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's my bottom line. As far as renegotiating, I'm not real clear on all the issues with NAFTA, but I know mine.
Mm-hmm.
What hits me personally, and if they would please keep the clause in there that says original artwork should not be duty.
Pat, thank you very much. Gary Huffbauer, jump back in here. I mean, there's Pat's individual story. She'd go out of business as an art dealer. Arturo Sarukhan talks about, you know, two-way trade and avocados and tomatoes and strawberries in the supermarket. I mean, do Americans understand, for good or for ill, how NAFTA has changed their lives, the way they live?
Well, probably not. I certainly sympathize with Pat, the wildlife artist, and she's right. But many Americans don't appreciate what would happen to the grocery store where they buy all this great produce from Mexico in the winter months. And there are all kinds of examples of, such as Pat, of people who are selling products in Canada and Mexico who would, you know, if it were terminated, suddenly they'd be out of work.
Mm-hmm.
But let me come to a legitimate grievance that the United States has, both with respect to Canada and Mexico, and that is low-value shipments. In the case of Canada, if a Canadian travels to the United States and he stays under 24 hours and he tries to bring back some stuff to Canada, he pays full duty and taxes. And there's a kind of a value add, it's called a goods and services tax in Canada, which is 13%. It goes through a lot of paperwork. Now, an American who goes to Canada for a day trip, go up to Vancouver, up to, you know, up to Toronto or something, he can buy up to $200 of stuff and bring it back to the U.S. And U.S. Customs doesn't give any hassle at all. He just brings it right through the border.
Mm-hmm.
And with Mexico, it's the same, kind of the same problem. In the case of Mexico, there's a $50 allowance for you know, not having any hassle, but you bring in more than that. So a Mexican who might buy through eBay more than a $50 item from Amazon or eBay or whatever, the paperwork's going to just overwhelm him, and he's going to pay some taxes and on that, and it really discourages, you know, small value shipments between U.S. to Mexico and also U.S. to Canada. So those are legitimate.
Yeah, I hear it. Let me ask Lawrence Herman about that from the Canadian perspective. Talk about what Gary just said, you know, and well, do you understand Gary, that argument? Balance here?
Gary's right. A traveler buying goods in Canada and coming back to the United States is not subject to the same hassle, provided that that American coming back from Canada doesn't bring in Cuban cigars. But look, what Gary is talking about, and what Arturo is talking about, is a balanced adjustments to make the NAFTA work better. And there is no doubt there are a range of issues, some small, some less small, some important. There are a lot of issues. E-commerce was mentioned, mm-hmm. trade facilitation, border customs clearance procedures. There are a lot of areas where we could sit down, all three countries, and make balanced improvements to the agreement. What concerns me, and what concerns the Canadian government, if I may offer that, mm-hmm. is the rhetoric and the bombast surrounding these negotiations and the attitude that if it is not best for the United States and we don't get what we want when we put our demands on the table, we're going to walk away. That, to me, is not conducive of an adjustment, improvements to make the North American economy function more effectively and more efficiently for the benefit of all three countries.
Yes, and so Gary Huffbauer, speak to that. I mean, there are a lot of people who say, well, that's Trump style over substance. The substance of this is that many Americans say, you know, U.S. getting the short end of the stick in a lot of these trade deals, and we have to change that.
Well, first of all, I don't agree that the U.S. has gotten the short end of the stick, though, as I've said, there are a lot of areas of possible improvement. And the U.S. certainly has barriers that limit both Canadian and Mexican exports to the United States. And those should be on the table. My hope is that President Trump really turns the negotiations over to his Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross and his trade ambassador designate, who is just about to be confirmed, Robert Lighthizer. I mean, I think these people get down to the, you know, the real issues, both on the U.S. side and on the Mexican and Canadian side, where we can make very, very significant improvements in this, as Arturo said, this agreement, which in its day was the gold standard, but, you know, it's gotten a bit tarnished, mm-hmm. and it needs some, you know, polishing up.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service you've heard about. Its mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to all. They support a more sustainable food system, set the highest standards for ingredients, and make it easy and fun to cook. You decide which recipes and how many meals you want each week. Change, pause, or cancel anytime. Learn more at blueapron.com/onpoint. Go now and get your first three meals free plus free free shipping at blueapron.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about NAFTA this hour and three huge and intertwined economies, the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, and whether we need to update the rules by which we trade with each other. You can join the conversation. Can we leverage this moment not just to fix what's wrong with NAFTA, but actually give these three nations a boost? My guest this hour, a terrific roundtable, Arturo Sarukhan, former ambassador for Mexico to the United States, Lawrence Herman, a senior fellow at Canada's C.D. Howe Institute, and Gary Huffbauer, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Here was President Trump last Tuesday firing a salvo at Canada over unfair trade deals and announcing new tariffs on Canadian lumber.
We will be putting a very big tariff on lumber, timber coming into this country. People don't realize Canada has been very rough on the United States. Everyone thinks of Canada as being wonderful, and so do I. I love Canada. But they've outsmarted our politicians for many years.
In response to the White House's announcement that it will slap tariffs on certain kinds of Canadian lumber, Canada's foreign minister delivered a slap of her own. Chrystia Freeland told CNN Tuesday that Canada is prepared to fight hard to defend its jobs.
We're nice guys. Politeness is something that we believe is a national virtue. But it's not an accident that hockey is our national sport. And when it comes to defending Canada's economic interests, we're going to play hard.
So, Lawrence Herman, our Canada voice here. Donald Trump says Canada has been very rough on the U.S., especially when it comes to lumber. We'll be putting now a big tariff on lumber. What do you say to that?
Well, this is part of the ongoing dispute we have on softwood lumber. It's been going on for many years and will continue to go on for many years. But just because we have differences over how we price lumber doesn't mean that the entire edifice of the bilateral relationship is somehow rotten or imperfect or needs to be wrenched in a dramatic way. Look, the NAFTA, and this isn't really often mentioned, but the NAFTA is the product of a negotiation, and the U.S. structured the NAFTA in a way that met its national interests. It wouldn't have concluded an agreement if that wasn't the case. And the NAFTA was based on an earlier free trade agreement between Canada and the United States, a bilateral trade agreement. The suggestion that successive U.S. administrations and all of the hundreds, if not thousands and thousands of officials involved in putting these deals together somehow sold out the U.S. national interest is frankly preposterous. Mm. This agreement is structured in a way that meets U.S. national interests. It doesn't meet 100% of those national interests because it's a compromise. It's a balanced deal. But I just find the suggestion that somehow previous administrations sold the United States and the public interest down the river to be, frankly, nonsense.
Nonsense, Gary Huffbauer? What is your response?
Well, I'm in total agreement with Larry Herman. I knew many of these people who were negotiators. I mean, you know, we had George H.W. Bush, the senior Bush, and his people, Carla Hills, just a brilliant woman. Jules Katz, I worked with her. Mm-hmm. We had Secretary Jim Baker, who helped close the deal with Canada. And then we had Bill Clinton. I mean, Bill Clinton and his trade ambassador, Mickey Cantor. I mean, these were not dummies. And Larry is completely right to go back in history and say that U.S. was outfoxed by Canada and so forth. I think really sells our prior negotiators short by a long distance. But that's not to say that there aren't improvements that can be done. And as Larry rightly said, the U.S. did not get everything it asked for. Trade negotiations are compromises.
Bring in Mexico's voice here, Arturo Sarukhan. I read an interesting study from Tufts University that found that NAFTA has been credited with the rise of the Mexican middle class, that NAFTA lowered the average cost of basic necessities in Mexico by up to 50%. So with that as a backdrop, I'm just curious how the Mexican people are feeling about a possible renegotiation of NAFTA or a removal of it, you know, in their daily lives.
Look, there's no doubt that, first of all, a word of caution, free trade agreements are exactly that. They're there to eliminate tariffs, to eliminate barriers to trade, and to enhance trade. And you know, NAFTA has done that admirably well in the 23-plus years. People don't realize that Mexico and the United States trade $1.4 billion a day of goods in both directions, and that Mexico, Canada, and the United States are negotiating now around $1 trillion a year. So in terms of boosting trade, NAFTA has done this admirably well. NAFTA isn't a social policy program. It's not an extreme poverty alleviation mechanism, but it has had important side effects, and you've mentioned one of them, which is that over these past 20 years, there has been a slow but important and undeniable expansion of the middle classes in Mexico. This doesn't mean that everything is peachy and rosy. Extreme poverty and economic polarization still are one of Mexico's Achilles heels. But you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out why Walmart has the largest number of stores outside the United States in one country, Mexico, and why the largest Best Buy store on the face of the earth in terms of square feet is in Mexico City. This middle class in Mexico that has been expanding, that has been growing, and that has latched onto the jobs and the better goods that are being traded between our three North American countries, this has played a very important role. So, if you engage with the Mexican private sector, there is a great concern as to what might happen. But what I think many people find perplexing, and I haven't talked to my Canadian friends lately, but my guess is that the sentiment would be relatively the same. That there's a bit of a paradox here: that of the three North American countries, the two countries behaving like the adults in the room are Canada and Mexico, where the U.S. is sort of seeking to undermine an agreement that has certainly benefited U.S. Interests and U.S. Mm-hmm. businesses, where the U.S. is, as Gary has said, minimizing the role that its trade negotiators have played throughout the years. I know Carla Hills and Secretary Baker and all the negotiators, the U.S. negotiators, not only of NAFTA but of trade policy, and there's some very tough cookies and some extremely intelligent people.
I get it. You know, you mentioned the big factories in Mexico, Arturo, and yeah. I think what a lot of Americans would say and what President Trump has said is that Mexico has lured away American factories and American jobs with cheap labor and other advantages enabled by NAFTA.
There's no doubt that at the outset, cheaper labor costs in Mexico were an important factor in the relocation of some manufacturing capability in the U.S. across the border. But over the years, that differential has closed. In fact, a lot of the labor loss that has occurred in the United States did not happen because of trade. It happened because of automation and robotization in the assembly lines, in the plants, which started happening, by the way, more or less at the same time that NAFTA was negotiated.
Mm-hmm.
And look, again, if President Trump and this administration want to scupper 6 million U.S. jobs that directly depend on trade with Mexico, be my guest. But it would be a huge self-inflicted wound if the United States continues to underscore that it is a net loser in this deal.
So, Gary Huffbauer, jump back in here. I mean, we talk about these smart negotiators, and you all know them. But the argument back to you is that they have looked after big business along the way and not the American worker.
Well, you're right. That's the argument. That's the narrative we've been told. But what we're not told is that the right way to deal with the American worker is not to deny him or her those great goods and services which come from Mexico and Canada, but to have much, much better labor adjustment policies in the United States. We have the worst amongst all advanced countries in the world, And what we do for people who lose their jobs, and as Arturo has correctly said, and we've looked at the numbers, about 85% of people who lose their jobs, that is, their displaced workers, are not because of trade. They're because of Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Larry Ellison, and all the brilliant producers of robotic equipment.
Automation,
okay,
robotics,
that's 85%. But the important point is that when people lose their jobs in our country, the government does nothing of any substance for them. Maybe I'm stating it a bit strongly, but compared to what Canada does, compared to what England does, compared to what Germany does, and so we're getting all the payback on trade, which is not the real issue. But unfortunately, the narrative has misinformed Americans on the problem.
Let me get Chip in here from Mooresville, North Carolina. Hi, Chip. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Hi. Panelist. I'm really enjoying the discussion. And my observation has been touched upon by Gary, I think. And I'm just amazed that for 2 years, Donald Trump has been demonizing trade, when in fact it was a Republican HW vision for NAFTA, I believe, to begin with. And I think it's irresponsible, the demagoguery, the trade demagoguery that he's put forth.
And so what do you want to see, Chip? How do you want to move forward?
I want to keep NAFTA, improve it for the e-commerce, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But there are thousands of untold benefits that the American people don't realize. And what has happened is they've been, so many of the Trump supporters have been lulled into just pure rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. A misunderstanding of it? Chip, thank you. I get it. I got to move on to Grady here in Dripping Springs, Texas, for another perspective. You're on the air, Grady. Welcome.
Howdy, Jane.
Hi.
One of the things I never hear mentioned it about in the assessment of the effects of NAFTA is the effect on illegal immigration. I mean, it's kept a lid on the pressure cooker that is Mexico. I mean, the pressure for outward migration from Mexico has been greatly reduced by the opportunity for gainful employment in their home country.
Mm. That's an interesting point, Grady. Thank you. Gary Huffbauer, what do you say to caller Grady that NAFTA's kept a lid on the pressure cooker in Mexico?
Well, Grady is absolutely right. And the number of illegal immigrants in the United States, the best we can do the numbers, has not increased in the last 6 or 8 years. It's stated about 11 million. So as many people go back to Mexico or maybe back to Guatemala as come over the border. So again, the narrative I think is quite misleading. And the way you're going to get a lot more illegal immigration is by creating a depression in Mexico. And if NAFTA were terminated and all the, you know, the most extreme things were done, like at the 35% tariff mentioned in the campaign but not mentioned by President Trump, this would be, you know, what are people going to do when their families are starving? I just can't agree more with what Grady said.
It's not just immigration, Arturo Sarukhan. It's a lot of other issues between the U.S. and Mexico. I mean, we're talking about building a wall. There are drug trafficking issues. I mean, to your mind, in our just a little bit of time left here, could a new and improved NAFTA actually help mitigate those other tensions?
Well, certainly, I think you've pointed out that many Mexicans feel that Mexico was used as a political piñata during the elections by candidate Trump, and this has contaminated what is a very important bilateral relationship on the face of the earth. No country touches the daily lives of Americans more than Mexico does on a daily basis. And so all these different issues, whether it's undocumented migration flows, now more of Central Americans coming through Mexico on their way to the U.S. Remember, Mexican migration to the U.S. Is at a zero net, and it has been at a zero net, which means more Mexicans are going back than those coming into the United States without papers. because of a combination of factors. Mexico is being able to anchor those jobs. The economy has grown. The lingering effects of the recession in the United States in 2009, particularly in services and construction, had an impact too. The role of organized crime muscling its way into human smuggling and human trafficking also makes it more dangerous. But all of these issues are interconnected. And right. The challenge of how Mexico has been used by this administration politically and electorally makes all of these issues, whether it's the wall, whether it's NAFTA, whether it's undocumented immigration in the United States, could constrain the political maneuverability of the Mexican government as it goes forward. Mm-hmm. And we haven't talked about something which will be very relevant in the coming months, which is that the longer it takes for us to sit down and start talking and negotiating about NAFTA, the closer we get to the U.S. midterm elections in 2018 and to a presidential election in Mexico in 2018. And we know that elections and very complex processes like a negotiation of NAFTA usually don't mix well.
It'll take a long time. Well, 10 seconds each in our final minute here. If you three gentlemen were leading a renegotiation of NAFTA, what's the one thing you would bring to the table? Lawrence Herman, from Canada's perspective?
I would deal with services and e-commerce and bringing the agreement up to date to deal with contemporary technological developments. It can be done, and it can be done responsibly.
Mexico's perspective, Arturo Surocan.
I would fully agree with what has just been said, and basically to underscore that NAFTA has been a success story for the three North American countries and that we are co-stakeholders to each other's success.
And Gary Huffbauer, final 10 seconds.
Yeah, I agree completely with what Larry and Arturo have said. And also, I do think we could get rid of a lot of the paperwork goo which obstructs trade in all three directions.
Well, more to come, and many thanks to a really great panel, very insightful conversation. Thank you very much, and to you listeners, appreciate it. You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.